Hi, you are listening to WIT Vikings at Sport at WIT Podcast. Hi, I'm Sean Gagan.
And I'm Jack Lyons.
And we're your hosts for episode 23 of the WIT Vikings Sport Podcast. In today's episode, we will be focusing on sports psychology and mental toughness. Sports psychology is a critical part of modern sport and has been highlighted further recently during the COVID-19 pandemic. Athletes are forced to train in different environments and are forced out of their regular schedules. Today, we are delighted to welcome current Waterford IT sports psychology lecturers and practitioners, Kira Lossy and Jerry Fitzpatrick. Kira is the course leader for the Masters of Science in Applied Sport and Exercise Psychology course at Waterford IT. She holds a doctor in health science and sports psychology, was part of the Team Ireland sports science and medical team for the London 2012 Olympic Games, and is also currently sports psychology provider for the Jockey Pathway. Jerry is a lecturer in sports psychology and strength and conditioning in Waterford IT, and is widely regarded as one of the best sports psychology practitioners, strength and conditioning, and indeed basketball coaches in the country. Jerry holds a master's in sports psychology from Ithaca College in New York and a master's in strength and conditioning from Cork IT. Guys, welcome to the show.
Hi, Sean.
How are we getting on for the last few weeks during the pandemic? Are we used to not being so busy? Or are we flat out correcting work?
I think we're flat out correcting that right here. I think I'm starting to adapt actually now and kind of maintain a new normal and a new routine and engage in all the technologies that are available. Thank God they're there. And we're quite busy correcting at the moment and getting thesis done and getting people over the line at the moment. So it's still a busy time for us.
How are you adapting, Jerry, with the technology?
Learning new skills every day, Sean, to try to keep up here. But yeah, it's busy enough. Like Kira said, loads of corrections, thesis, and lots of time every day trying to learn new things on the old laptop. So, but missing sport, definitely.
I think we all are, yeah. So we'll kind of let you guys introduce yourself in more detail. Kira, we'll start with you. Can you give us a summary of your kind of sporting and sports psychology journey so far?
So I actually studied under Jerry, and my first qualification was a research master's in sport and exercise psychology. And then I just kind of worked my way through the applied system and then got accreditation to the Irish Institute of Sport. And now I'm actually working with the Irish eventing team, the Irish dressage team for Tokyo 2021 Modern Pentathlon. And athletics as well. Worked a lot with inter-county teams and senior hurling and football teams as well. And I'm also the sports psychology service provider in the Jockey Pathway. So for all licensed professional jockeys, they have basically like a mini Institute of Sport based in Kildare. But now we're all embracing technology now as well. So all these meetings are happening over Zoom and WhatsApp calls. So they have free sports psychology and dietitian and strength and conditioning. So all suite of sports science services available to them. So that's all my applied work. And then the day job in the undergrad and the postgrad in WIT as well. So that's where I'm at the moment. So postponed a little bit.
Jerry, you kind of took a little bit of a different route, getting your undergrad in Ireland and then going off to America to kind of continue your education and coaching. Can you give us a kind of brief summary of your coaching journey and your psychology journey so far?
If I can remember back that far now, Sean, I suppose it's the best part of 37, 38 years ago now when I started in sports psychology. I did my postgrad in the States in Ithaca College in Kansas State and was fortunate enough at the time to have maybe two of the leading sports psychologists in the world, Craig Fisher in Ithaca and Dan Gould of Gould and Weinberg fame in Kansas. So that kind of started me on the sports psychology pathway. From there, there was nothing really organized in terms of Institute of Sport or accreditation in Ireland at the time. So spent a lot of time working across a lot of different sports. Obviously, coaching and basketball took off from my time in the States, where I was assistant coach in Ithaca. And then really, sports psychology was just a part of what I did in coaching for a long time. And then probably in the last 17 years ago, I think we started planning the masters in WIT, Kira and myself, after Kira finished her masters. And around that time, I think the development of the course forced the hand of the sports council to get an accreditation system in place for sports psychology. After basketball, it was pretty much GA, hurling, football, some individual sports. I still work with a couple of golfers, boxer, and track athlete, and I suppose soccer as well, League of Ireland soccer with Waterford FC. So that's kind of brought us the last 15 years to the Masters, has kind of brought us to where we are today.
Very good, very good. So probably an outsider coming in, like most listeners, I may not be too familiar with the process of sports psychology. So without giving away too much information, Jerry, how do you introduce the methods to an athlete or a team? How do you start them?
I suppose for me, the most important thing is that the athlete comes first looking for some type of sports psych support. If it's something that the athlete wants, then you're halfway up the ladder in terms of getting them on board and integrating it into their sports training. But generally, I think it's the more skilled and the higher skilled the athlete, the more the playing field is equal and the mental aspect of the game becomes more important at that time. So generally with the higher end athletes, with the high performance athletes, they know where the gaps are in their game. They know what their strengths and weaknesses are. And I think it's an easy sell at that level. It's a little more difficult when the level is a little lower and they're looking to try to improve their performance with the aid of some mental preparation. But obviously the playing field is not as level then.
Yeah, so you find it actually is probably more suited and probably better worked with your high-performance elite athletes, I'd say.
Well, I think there's something there for every level, but I think that the engagement of getting the athletes to engage is higher when they're more aware of how small the margins are between success and failure.
Kira, I suppose the next one to you. Is there a particular sport that you've worked with during your time that you've found particularly challenging, I suppose? So that could be true, I suppose, a lack of culture or whatever it might be, but a sport that you found that, I suppose, you couldn't get through to the athletes quite as easily.
I'd say working with the jockeys is incredibly challenging because it's an incredibly macho, masculine type environment as well. It wouldn't have a culture and environment where they would generally engage with sports science at all. And I don't just mean psychology, I just mean the suite of sports sciences. So working within that environment is difficult and really getting out the message about that it's also performance psychology. It isn't like sports psychology isn't always based around a medical model where there's something broken and that I need somebody to fix me. So it's kind of, we're trying to really move away from that and come up from a real positive psychology perspective where you can get somebody who's good to maybe move to great by using some mental skills training or enjoying their sport more, which will in turn look after their mental health and their wellness as well. So the jockeys are definitely a challenging type environment to work on because they have no gatekeeper as well. They have no coach, they have no team. They're like a sole trader. They just work for themselves as one business. So you don't even have somebody to connect with or a coach that might say, do you know, it might be helpful if you worked on this particular aspect of your performance. They're challenging, but they're incredibly interesting as well. And then we have, again, within that arena, the issues around weight, wasting, nutrition, and the shy away from strength and condition.
Just got it from your experience. Like, I mean, you both work with loads of individual athletes and teams from all over the world already. Is there a sport that has taken on sports psychology more than others, or is there one that you've enjoyed working with more than others? Jerry, you particularly have worked with team sports and individuals in the last 30 years. So has there been a team there or a team that you can remember or an individual you remember that has taken up sports psychology more than others?
I think some of the individual sports, I know that golf is one where the psychology of performance is massive. And I think golf, my limited experience with golfers has been that this is something that they embrace very quickly and they understand it. And I think there's also a culture, people like Bob Rotella have popularized sports psychology tremendously in golf. So that's one that stands out immediately as a welcoming sport for sports psychology.
And Kira, same kind of thing. Have you?
Yeah, I think it depends. It really has depended on the individual, not necessarily the sport, but I do find individual athletes are probably more open to sports psychology. They're used to engaging with different individuals. They're a little bit more proactive in their choices as well, because they have to be, because they have to look after themselves. So they are definitely a little bit more open to sports psychology. I do see it in the GAA that it is definitely changing. It would have been something that would have been very closed, and they still are a little bit secretive about the use of sports psychology. It's not something that they talk about in teams, but it's that they're there. There is sports psychologists and psychology service providers embedded in most inter-county setups. They just don't really speak about it.
I suppose as someone like myself has a keen interest in sport, sports psychology seems to be something that's becoming more and more popular, I suppose. Have you noticed this in your time in the industry, Jerry, that jump in demand or jump in popularity, I suppose, in sports psychology?
Absolutely. There's definitely a greater awareness of the benefits of better mental preparation and how it transfers into performance. And I think the delivery of sports psychology too has become a little better. That especially I find in team sports is it can be delivered in a more subtle way. It's not so much educational sports psychology. Here's a workshop, sit down, listen to this, but it's getting coaches to take on better forms of communication, better practices that help athletes become mentally tougher, deal with pressure better, manage the hype in games a lot better. But I think it's sometimes it can be happening, and I think it's been happening constantly in sport. Even before sports psychology was popular, it just wasn't really recognized as a field of study. But I think I think nearly every sport now is aware of the potential for better performances if they can enhance the mental side of their game.
Yeah, so the quality of how it's being delivered is growing with the demand, which is good.
Well, I think the variety, Jack, has certainly changed. It's like Kira said earlier, it hasn't been people coming in to fix something that's wrong. It's people coming in to add something to what's already there and maybe try to take it up a level.
Kira, do you still find yourself being limited by some perspectives from different coaches or different managers in any kind of setting?
And I think, that's something, I suppose, that goes back to your own kind of practice philosophy as well. It's something that you have to decide as a practitioner. Do you take the job, and is it the way you feel that you're guided by best practice guidelines? Or are you going to let a coach dictate? So you do have, there is give and take obviously there as well. But for me, it's about making a decision about, are you able to deliver the best service with the best evidence-based practice that actually guides your actual mental skills training program for the team or the individual as well. So there may be a role or maybe a job that you might actually, it could be incredibly high profile, but you might actually have to step back and not take because it actually doesn't align with your practitioner philosophy, or you feel that you might not be able to deliver the best program that you know that you can actually deliver. And they're the tough decisions to make if you're particularly starting out on your own career. You're trying to get up the ladder, you're trying to get a bit of work experience under your belt, and it'd be nice to take obviously a high profile job on. So it depends on, I suppose, your negotiation with the coach who generally, or the manager, whoever is leading the actual team, but how best you can actually deliver it, or are they dictating how they think you should deliver it. I don't know, Jerry's thoughts on that.
Jerry, any thoughts on that, Jerry? Have you any experiences of kind of anybody trying to limit your kind of what you're doing with the team or individual athlete?
I mean, I think it's always a tricky situation. I mean, you know, I go with the philosophy is sports psych has to be on tap, not on top. And it's the coach who really calls the shots. It's their role, it's their job. It's the buck is going to stop with them at the end of the day. So, you know, they have a big say in what they actually think an individual athlete or a team needs. But I think the negotiation of what's going to be done and how it's going to be done is the critical thing at the outset. And if that can be agreed, then you can always debate later on, you know, whether we're sticking to what we said we were going to do. But I think it's being on tap and not on top is key for all the sports sciences.
I agree. But I think both coaches, particularly when they do want to embed sports psychology into their program, no more is to do with strength and condition, nutrition. They try and get the best people on board and they let the people do their job. That's generally what, you know, good coaches
do. So with each of your journeys through sports psychology has obviously led you down some fantastic paths. Kira, we'll start with you. Do you have a particular memory that stands out for you being at a particular event or working with a particular athlete?
I have to say being at the London Olympic Games was just amazing. It was a tough experience. It was 24/7, but it was probably the pinnacle of my career to date from a performance perspective. I just loved it. You're just embedded into a Team Ireland. You're definitely not going there to watch. I didn't see anything hardly at the games. When I was finished my work, I got to go to some events and stuff. But it was just a really important learning, really exciting experience, but lots of learnings. And being part of that multidisciplinary team and being embedded into it, it was a new experience where you're all there and you're all live working together for the benefit of a team. But you're also working with people that you've maybe never met before as well. So you're learning new skills from communicating and really not trying to interfere with anybody's preparation or not trying to drum up any business when you're at the Olympics, because whatever they've done to get there, they've obviously done a lot of things right. So you're not trying to interfere with any athletes at all, but just be there and available. What I've heard, or we myself and Jerry often call it, or we've heard it called strategic loitering. There's a lot of hanging around and, you know, being available at the right time if somebody wants to have some kind of conversation. But that was really, really exciting and really just a fantastic experience.
Brilliant, brilliant. Same kind of to you, Jerry. Is there a particular memory from your journey through sports psychology that sticks out as the best, I suppose?
I don't know. There's so many that seemed like they were the best at the time. But one thing that always stuck out for me was when I was at Kansas State, we got to work with the U.S. Olympic wrestling team. And that was a really, it was a big experience for me at the time because I was young. I was only starting out. And the environment in which you were working was, it was a very tough environment. It was very demanding. And there really wasn't a whole lot of room for people feeling that I didn't get something from that. So if I didn't get something, that's gone. I think I learned very early on that this is not like maybe some of the other sports sciences where the results can be concrete, that the results here of working with athletes can be quite abstract. And that for me very early on in that environment when I was in experience always stood out for me as an example of how quickly athletes, particularly high performance athletes, can expect to get a payback for the time and effort they put into the sports psychology. I think the other type of experience has been when I've got to work with a team for an extended period of time, like 5, 6, 7 years with a team means that you go through an awful lot of material and an awful lot of content in sports psychology, and you see longitudinally how athletes can change and develop over a long period of time. And I've been lucky enough to have maybe two or three of those experiences, and they've been good, because you get to the point where it's almost like you're not delivering a sports psychology service. You're, like Kira said, you're hanging around, but you are engaged in the process of trying to improve mindsets and so on.
Kira, just to kind of steer the conversation to where we currently are, the kind of challenging situation that we're currently in. Obviously, a lot of athletes are training in isolation and training in different environments and out of their comfort zones. Have you any tips for kind of athletes or indeed the kind of general public to kind of keep their mental health healthy, really, during this time?
Yeah, it is a challenging time, particularly for athletes, because everything is at a total standstill and we're not sure when we're going to get back. But really about putting your basic needs first is really important. Our jobs are to stay safe and stay well. So maintaining your sleep, getting in your exercise and good nutritious food, like really looking after the basic simple things well, are really important. I've heard a lot of people, keep talking about social distancing. It's really physical distancing, but maintaining social contact with people. So virtual communication is really important. And I think teams and sports people can do that. So either whether you're looking at conducting a session and then maybe having a little meeting or a chat or a Zoom session after it, though, using the technologies available are really important as well. Just being aware of monitoring your mood and your feelings. Like, things are probably going to be a little bit more extreme at this time. They're going to be a bit more up and down, and rolling with those things and focusing on what you can control and letting go of the things that you can't control at this time is really important, because there's so much stuff that we can't control, but we have to let go of those things and really focus only on what we can, which is how we think, how we feel and how we behave as well. So I think there's some basic simple tips. And again, another one is probably limiting our social media use and really only taking information from one or two reputable sources, limiting our time on social media, and even setting an alarm or something that you have your 10 or 15 minutes and you move up, because they can create worry and anxiety for people as well. But being aware of the power of choice about how you think and how you feel. We can't control it, but we can definitely control how we respond to our situations. And I think athletes are really in a good place to be able to respond well to these things, because they have innate resilience, and they also have developed resilience as well. And they generally take on huge challenges in their careers and in their sporting life. So they're in a good place to actually be able to bounce back from these things. But they're at an equal disadvantage. Everybody, it's not happening for anybody, for any sport. So maybe Jerry, something to add there.
I know. I mean, I agree with everything Kira said there. I think the only additional things I might be able to add is that I know with some of the athletes that I work with at the moment, we're trying to encourage them to now see this as a time where they have additional time to put into their mental training, and making them aware of. I mean, we last week in a Zoom session, we had a group of athletes who were able to identify 15 skills, mental skills they had developed through their sport that are now transferable to the environment that we find ourselves in. So I think, yeah, seeing this as an opportunity to put more time into your mental preparation, because they usually have less time when they're in competition. And I think the second thing and the big thing is just the attitude of, you know, keep training, because your competitors could be training. So, you know, don't come back and find that I'm not prepared. You'll never outperform your preparation. So I think it's just so important that they keep training, because that's the anchor for their resilience and their attitude and their well-being.
Back to you then, Jerry, on that. Like, speaking with a lot of your athletes in quarantine and in isolation, and a lot of your contacts with those athletes now on Zoom, sports psychology obviously needs that interpersonal connection, I suppose. Is it hard to create that over the internet or on Zoom?
Yeah, I find it very hard. I find it very hard. It's new, I suppose. We're only all learning. But, you know, there's so much that can be absent in the contact you have via Zoom or on phone calls. But yeah, that is challenging. But I think, again, and Kira emphasized, so long as they have social contact with other athletes, then I think that's probably a big thing for them.
Kira, just to touch base on the master's course in WIT, you were nominated for the postgraduate course of the year last year. It must be a huge sense of pride for you.
Yeah, I think it's a great representation of the work that the team, we're a very small team, and the work that we've all put in to date. So it's lovely to be actually recognised for it from a national perspective. And it's just, yeah, it was really nice.
Can you give us some kind of insight of how the kind of course works, the schedule, and kind of some of the things that you might cover in it?
Yeah, so our focus is very applied, and kind of developing applied practitioners to be able to work in the areas of sport and exercise psychology. So the course is delivered one day a week on a Monday only in the WIT arena from 10:15 to 5:15. Then each semester, it's a three-semester course. You have one residential week as well. So you'd be given those dates in advance when you'd actually have to attend for those residential weeks. So the types of modules will be applied sports psychology, performance psychology, exercise psychology, social psychology, team building strategies, entrepreneurial and professional development, and also mental skills training. And within your portfolio as well, there will be a major thesis piece of work and a focus on a case study of working with an athlete. So again, it's very, very applied. And it also allows the student really to pick and choose the essay titles they'd like, the thesis titles they'd like, so they get to actually direct their actual masters to the areas that they feel that they would excel in, but they also maybe can line it up with an area that they'd also like to work in.
Jerry, who's your favourite ever student from the course?
there was a guy that works for WIT now called Sean Gagan, but yeah.
Final question then to you lads. I suppose with lockdown allowing probably a bit more time for everyone to slow down a bit, have you taken up any hobbies that you had in the past, or ones that you've taken up newly? Jerry, I know you're a keen table tennis player.
Yeah, unfortunately, no table, and nobody to play against. So, I play a bit of chess. I play a bit of chess against some computer thing that keeps beating me. But that's about the only additional thing. Right now, we're still working, really. So it's not like when you get your holidays and you have that free time. But miss the table tennis, Jack.
Kira, same question to you. Have you taken up anything different?
I'm on the lookout for swing ball. So there's a black market for swing ball. I've been trying to source it everywhere. Do you remember playing that as a kid with the yeah, racket? I'm on the hunt for swing ball. But apart from that, I've been probably setting new records, pushing a buggy up and down the greenway, going for runs every day out of the house.
That's it.
No, you don't have to learn anything new in this. Our job really is to stay safe and say, well, if you do, nice. If you don't, that's okay too.
Perfect. So that kind of brings us to our conclusion. So just to Kieran and Jerry, many thanks for joining us today. It was brilliant to chat to you, and I suppose two very high, very experienced people in the field of sports psychology. And thanks for sharing your insights and insights to quarantine looks like for you and what looks like for your athletes as well.
Thanks, lads.
And that's a wrap for episode 23. I've been Jack.
I've been Sean. Thanks, guys.
And this podcast is brought to you by WIT Novus. Thanks very much.